welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kate Murray alongside Stevie Nicol. A little later on, we will be joined by Julien Laurent as well because we have a lot to talk about. But we will start with that interview with Erling Haaland. We've been bringing you a little bit of it every single day. It was conducted by our very own Jan Agafyartov. And in the latest installment, he talks about the strikers that he looked up to when he was a kid.
Do you think that the 14-year-old Erling Haaland running around at Brynäs doing the stuff he's did then, is that the same guy who's now doing the same thing on the pitch and off the pitch? In some interviews, you come in, you eat, you drink, you talk to people. Would a 14-year-old do the same?
And it's, of course, I've been developing a lot and so on. But if you take only on the pitch, I still do a lot of the same things that I did then. If you see clips from me when I was 14, 15 years old, I play basically on the exact same things and that I've been doing for a long time. I've been saying it before, I've been not studying, but I've been watching a lot of players. Let's take an example, the run in behind from the center back when the number 10 has the ball. You maybe have the best in the world on that, Jamie Wardy. I've been looking a lot on him, on exactly this. And yeah, that's how I am. I've always been watching a lot of football and I still do. You know, when we've been playing a game on Saturday, I go home on Sunday and I watch football all day. And that's, you know, I've been always been liking football a lot.
So you, when you see a football game, there is something you want to develop, you try to find yourself role models or people who do that good as a Jamie Wardy. Are there other players you learn from?
Yeah, I watch a lot of, I mean, that's why I always wanted to become a striker, because a striker is, for me, the best position and also the ones that's scoring goals, and that's always what I've been wanting to do. Van Persie, I watched a lot. He was also left-footed, so I watched him a lot as well, scoring goals. And as me, I am a left-footed as well, so that was natural to also watch him a lot. So yeah, I've been watching a lot of especially strikers.
You were in a team of the year by FIFA, the best, called congratulations. Big honor and be on the stage there, being interviewed by the legendary Arsene Wenger. If you were to vote, because there's always voting system, if you're going to vote 1, 2, 3, how would you have voted on players?
Oof, that's a good question. It was the last year, right? I think you have to say, Lewandowski.
Lewandowski number one.
Yeah, Lewandowski number one. Mm-hmm. And then you have, for me, Benzema has also been amazing, but also, I mean, Messi is also outstanding. So Benzema and Messi on shared second and third place, I think I have to say.
What's the toughest defender you've played against in your life? I like the way you think.
Yeah, good question. I've been playing against a lot of good, but it also matters a lot how the team is playing. If I come to the right situations and so on. But Van Dijk, I said before, he was really good. You know, you know how tall he is, how strong he is, and how fast he is, and also the timing is crazy. I don't think I won one duel against him because he's really a physical monster. So maybe Van Dijk. Ramos was also really good. Ramos was really, really smart and good. So maybe one of them.
What's the toughest team you play against?
I never won against Bayern, so I probably have to say Bayern. I think I played 6 times against them, 6 or 7 times. I lost every game, so I have to say Bayern.
I can ask you now, because you're not in a Champions League, that was not a banter, or you're not in Champions League. Who do you think you will win Champions League?
Win Champions League? I think either Manchester City or Paris, or Madrid. Paris and Madrid will meet now, so one of these three. Did I remember? One second. Yeah, I think City, Paris, or Madrid?
City, Paris, Madrid. True or false? Dortmund will win the European League.
Can I say true or false? But it's we have a chance. We have to perform at our best, and we have to perform better than we've been doing this season. And there's a lot of good teams, but we have a small chance.
Great stuff, Jan. Great to have you on. Actually, the lads were giving you some stick yesterday for this interview, saying that you looked like a Haaland psychologist in it. And we talked about Team Haaland. We heard that he's the CEO. His dad's the managing director. Mina Raiola's the sporting director. And the boys thought that you were trying to see what your role might be on Team Haaland. So could it be that, the psychologist?
Well, I saw especially Dan giving me some stick because I look like a psychiatrist, but I got him to open himself, so I think I will be the best psychiatrist in the world. But it was great. It was great to show him from another side. A lot of people see him as a superman, and I tried to see Clark Kent. That was the guy I wanted to see, and he was quite open. Not that it surprised me, but I think that was good to show that part of him as well.
Let's talk about the mental side of Haaland's game as well then, because we've heard in parts of the interview about his injuries. We know that he's injured at the moment and expected back later in February. Do you think this player's mental strength, and we'll get to his physical attributes in a moment, but do you think his mental strength is a big part of why he is where he is now?
Absolutely. And when you speak to Erling, if you speak to him, how he prepare for a game, how he trained 24/7 to improve his game, how he never goes for something comfort, and you're talking about his treatments and everything. This is a man, yes, he got a conservative treatment, an established treatment from his club, but he looks every way to try to get fit, to take 1 centimeter here, to work a tenth of a second there. He's working all along, and the way he's managed to all the stations that he's got, not only has he developed, but he have developed quicker than everybody thought in Salzburg and in Dortmund. So that's why I think there's always this speculation about him moving away, because his development is nearly quicker than himself, and I think that makes him unbelievable in the terms how he's using his mental strength to kind of block everything out.
You know, Jan, the one thing that impressed me about this interview was he clearly shows that he is very strong mentally. When you normally have a 21-year-old and you're sat in front of a camera and you're being asked questions, usually it's the cliche after cliche after cliche of being scared, of not wanting to say the wrong thing, of trying to do the right thing. This guy was sitting thinking about your questions and was very calm about it and very open. You don't see that in many 21-year-olds.
No, you don't. And I think that, I mean, we talked about his statement as well when he came out and said that people put me under pressure and everything. I think that surprised people a bit. This guy is very street smart. He's very, the way he's working, we can make jokes about his Team Haaland, but the way he is working on his strength, how he's working 24/7, as I said, is unbelievable. And I agree with you, Steve. When he sits down there, he is a 21-year-old. Sometimes you forget that he's 21. I remember when I was 21, I thought I was doing well. I remember my little brother, he slaughtered me when I was 21 doing interviews because he thought I was useless. And this guy is just relaxed. And I think that's why everybody tried to show in this interview. I think that's why Dortmund wanted to let this happen. And I think also this was the reason Erling Haaland sat down. I think people wanted to show beyond that machine kind of guy that is playing in the German Bundesliga.
Yeah, and I've got a question for you again, actually. I'm confused. We keep hearing about the pressure that Dortmund and Watzke are putting on him. Is the pressure to turn round and say to Dortmund, I am gone at the end of the season? Because that surely would be the right thing to do. And if I'm Dortmund, then I think he should tell them. But if it's for any other reason, then I suggest that's nonsense. But surely it has to be, can you just tell us if you are going or not?
Yeah, but I think that if at this moment you had Erling Haaland in front of you, you asked him the same question, Stevie, I'm sure that he would know. I'm not sure that he will know now that he's going. And people are not used to these kind of clauses in contracts, because that in British football, in English football, that is not used very often. But that is a period of time, say that is a month or whatever. I'm not sure when it is or whatever. So everything of this is already in his contract. So for him now to say, yes, I will leave, first of all, he got a contract with Dortmund Football Club for another two seasons. And that is point number one. And if someone going to come in and take that clause and buy the XY amount that he will go, that won't happen now anyway. But after that famous interview when he talked about the pressure, Dortmund and Erling, or especially Dortmund, want to say that they never made any kind of deadline. And Erling wants to say, well, he can understand that what Dortmund wants to know what I will do next season. But at the moment, I don't know that. I just want to play football.
Well, we've obviously been doing our part here on ESPN FC and trying to find little nuggets in there. Yesterday, he mentioned that he likes the crowds in the Premier League at the moment in that part of the interview and how nice that's been to see. We've also seen another part of the interview where he talks about how much he likes spending time in the sunshine. We know there's no sunshine in Manchester. Everybody knows that. So does that point towards Spain, Jan? Because that's what we could read into it.
Well, I think it's quite interesting. I try to do the same, and 100%, I mean, I know Team Holland, I play with his dad, and I know Erling and everything, and that's one of the reasons I will never, in an interview like this, ask him, what are you going to do next season? Because then he will never answer that. So I didn't put that into it. And same as you, then you will try to analyze things. I've said before, and I say it again, he's born in Leeds. His dad has played in English football. He will someday play in English football. I'm 100% sure about that. But it's all the matter where do you start, and there could be two roads you can think. You can think, well, I go to England now as I am fit, I can do whatever I want, or I feel I can do whatever I want, and I go there now when I'm a young player. Or you can think that you can go to Spain first, play for Real Madrid. There are games, and no disrespect to La Liga, but there are some games that are a bit easier, if I may say that, and I'm a big fan of La Liga, but there is a bit easier than the other games, and then go to England. If there is one analyse I will say when I watched them is that somehow I felt that the thing that going to Spain first and then to England was very clear before. I think that is a bit more equalized now. I think that is very open. I don't 100%, I'm not 100% sure because I don't know 100%, but I think that they don't know at the moment where he's going. It's like Formula One. There has to be a seat free. Where is Mbappé going? This and that. I think that we'll have this speculation for some times to go.
He's going to have his pick of the bunch, Stevie. If you were him, where would you look to go to next?
I would go to Manchester City.
Right now?
Well, yeah, right now. Because right now, they are by far the best team in the Premier League. We talk about how he wants to play in England. And if you're going to play in England, guess what? I think I'd like to play with the best team in the Premier League. You're also talking about a team that can't wait to get a Champions League trophy. And the owners are not going to keep backing the team, certainly until they win that Champions League trophy. So why not be a part of that as well? You could be the hero of the... You could be Erling Haaland, the father of Alfie Haaland, who comes back to Man City and wins the greatest European tournament they've ever had. There are so many great things that could happen. And where else could you really say that with any sort of certainty?
Yeah, because it does seem for him that the Champions League is a big factor. It's a trophy, he's told you, Jan, and understandably so, that he wants to win. Is he looking at which team he goes to next? Is it a team that definitely is a viable option? Not just a team that finishes in the top four, a team that really is one of the favourites to win the Champions League. Can you see him going to one of those sides?
Well, when he chose Salzburg and when he chose Dortmund, you got a feeling that the main thing was development. I understand now that the main thing is to win titles. And it's interesting the points that Stevie is making, not only that he's going to Manchester City, one of the favourites to win Champions League if he goes there, but it's also to he knows that he will improve under Pep Guardiola. He will make him a better player. Having said that, I can also understand, I mean, Real Madrid got this attraction to any player to once play with Real Madrid, maybe play with Mbappé, Benzema, and so on and so on. So I think it's very open. I mean, when you see in English football, things are moving at Chelsea as well. I mean, Chelsea wanted him. They were desperate to get him before they tried to get Lewandowski. They ended up with Lukaku. There are things that is not going so well for the number nine, the striker at Chelsea. So there could be some open seats soon.
You mentioning the likes of Kylian Mbappe and Karim Benzema, but we heard in that part of the interview that Jamie Vardy is a player he was looking to emulate when he was younger, a player he was looking to learn from. Were you surprised to hear that, Stevie?
No, not at all. As kids, we all have a hero, but we also have other players that we watch. And there's no question, when you're a kid, what you do is you go and emulate what they do. And that doesn't change when you become a pro, because you're always learning. And so whether it's generally somebody you're playing with, I would suggest, in my case, I'm talking about players like Kenny Dalglish. You know, when you're watching them every day and you see them doing things on the field, then again, you're going to emulate it. And I was in the team and I was doing that. So
even at that stage, you're still looking.
Absolutely. You're always learning something and you can always pick something up. And so I wasn't surprised. And as I said, don't be surprised. Even pros, we are always looking to learn something.
Dortmund will be back in action soon. We're hoping that Erling Haaland was as well, because they do have some points to make up on Bayern in the title race. Bayern 6 points ahead as it stands after 20 games played. When can we expect him back, Jan?
Also interesting. I mean, the treatment people at clubs, they are always conservative when they give a prediction. They will say 4 weeks. If he's fit after two, then the doctors and the physio will say, well, we did a fantastic job. Erling, he will always try to get back earlier. Remember, he did that, the same thing last time. Remember, he came back to that Bayern game. As I know the kid, he will do everything to be fit for the Leverkusen game. But that is how his treatment is responding. He also got another part of his team, Haaland. It's a guy from Lebanon who is like his wonder miracle man who works with him, and they work very hard together with Dortmund. So I hope that he will be back against Leverkusen, but that is all about how the treatment is responding.
Yeah, we hope he's back fighting fit soon, because we all love watching him play. Jan, great interview. Great to hear more from you interview. And if you would like to hear more from Erling Haaland and more from Jan's interview, make sure you subscribe to our ESPN FC page over on YouTube. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Liverpool are hoping to beat Tottenham Hotspur and Manchester United to the signing of Porto winger Luis Diaz. In fact, he's said to be Jurgen Klopp's number one target right now. Julian Laron here to talk about the player. What's the latest on this move then, Jules?
Well, the latest is that the talks are well ongoing, very positive between the two clubs. That Luis Diaz wants to join Liverpool. He's currently with Colombia. We saw him losing against Peru tonight, but he could do his medical back in Colombia while he's there with the national team and sign his contract with Liverpool. He's someone that they've been looking at for months and months now. This is not something unlike Tottenham that has just happened, that they sent an offer to Porto. He's a player that they've been following, that all the data that they have, that they gathered on him, it just points perfectly to the kind of player that he is, that fits Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp so well. So he wants to go. The two clubs are very nearing an agreement for the deal. He had a release clause of 90 million euros. Liverpool will get him for much less than that. And I think very soon Luis Diaz will be a Liverpool player.
It seemed as though Liverpool had abandoned plans to bring in players in this January transfer window. This has got to be good news for them if they do get a player like this, Stevie.
Listen, this guy's exciting. I think you have to look at the situation with Salah as well. You know, at some point, Liverpool have to replace Mane and Salah. And this is a guy, and there aren't many in world football that you think or you can believe could actually step in right now and actually produce. Because this guy right now is in the form of his life, in my opinion. And he's only going to get better. He fits the profile. 60 million. Just exactly the way that they got Mane. Similar type of age. Same with Salah. Goal scorers. Excitement. You talk about pace. I mean, this guy has got pace to bomb. He has every single thing that Klopp has in his team right now. So to bring somebody like him in, absolutely fantastic if you're a Liverpool fan.
You talk about a replacement. Salah hasn't signed his contract yet, Jules. Is this potentially Jurgen Klopp looking at his replacement?
Of course. And even if Salah signs, I mean, the front three, Firmino, Mane and Salah, will very soon be in their 30s. Diogo Jota is 25. Luis Diaz is 25. This is the next cycle now. Even if you allow that front three staying another season, for example, or whatever, you need at some point to get younger players in your team because Mane and Salah won't last forever, of course. So you bring them in and we saw already the impact that Jota had on this team. And I think Luis Diaz would be exactly the same. Stevie is spot on. He's got all the qualities to be. He's such a club player and such a current Liverpool style of football player that he will fit in so well. And then in when you're in a much stronger position, to Mo Salah, listen, either you sign in our terms or we already have not just one, but now two players capable of replacing you, at least on the pitch. Diaz is not going to score as many goals as Salah straight away, but certainly I think Liverpool would be a bit more comfortable to deal with the Mo Salah situation, whether he signs or not, stays or not, because they will have people that can replace him.
So Liverpool set to get this player. Is this going to be another one that got away for Spurs? Their transfer window in January turning out not the way they would have hoped, Jules?
Absolute nightmare for them. Diaz was one of the targets. And again, I was told today that they were ready to raise the offer. The first offer that they made was really, really low. I mean, we're talking 40 million, which I think Porto laughed in their face, but they were ready to match the Liverpool offer. The problem is that Liverpool had that relationship with Diaz and his agent because they've been following him for so long, working on a potential deal for so long, and he wants to go to Liverpool. And Spurs just arrived out of nowhere with that offer, and I don't think that's how you do business either. And so losing on Luis Diaz, losing on Adama Traore, who decided to go to Barcelona, also because Spurs took a very long time to increase the first offer on second offer to Wolves after Wolves rejected the first offer of 15 million. And even Frank Kessie, who Conte was very, very keen on for the summer, seems that he's not going to choose Spurs either. So that's so far is a very, very difficult transfer window. They will sign players. Someone like Amrabat, I think, will sign. Kulusevski, I think, will come from Juventus as well, but certainly not the first choice.
Yeah, so obviously with the reinforcements they are getting, but more to the point, the ones they've missed out on, do you think they're still going to make the top four, Jules?
I think it's difficult. We've said all along, haven't we, that they need to strengthen this team. We saw against Chelsea the most recent game that they're not good enough to compete at that level. Maybe it's good enough to finish top four and go ahead of United, West Ham and Arsenal. But it would have helped a lot if they got the players, had they got the players that they wanted that were top of their shortlist in this transfer window. Amrabat is a good player. He's probably better than what they have in midfield. Kulusevski is a much younger player, still a bit unproven, but he will bring a lot of energy, by the way, in a position where they already have a lot of players. Son, Bergwijn, Lucas Moura. So I'm not sure where Kulusevski is going to fit. But yeah, of course, I think if you had added Luis Diaz to this team, and even Adama Traore, Franck Kessié, whoever else they were in, it would have been a bigger push for top four than what it will be now.
Meanwhile, Arsenal are not having a much better time of it, Jules, in their quest to find a striker. They know they can't have Dusan Vlahovic now.
Yeah, of course, no Vlahovic. I don't know if he used them in a way, if they spent too much time chasing him, maybe if they were really in for him, actually. But the problem is, it's not so much Vlahovic, it's the fact that they let Maitland-Niles go, they let Chambers go, they let Pablo Mari go. Aubameyang is very much up in the air. So already, and Balogun has gone on loan, there's talks about Nketiah, I think, quite likely going to Newcastle. So suddenly you already had a thin squad in the first half of the season, where you've struggled at times with your squad rotation and who you could play in your team. And now you've let five players go from that squad, and you haven't brought anyone in. And the only one that's going to come in is Matt Turner, the goalkeeper from the New England Revolution and the USA. Really, really good goalkeeper. You already had Ben Leno, who's also a good goalkeeper behind Ramsdale. So let's hope for Arsenal fans that they have planned some ins coming in the next few days before Monday, because otherwise it would be hard to understand how you can let so many players go and not having any reinforcement against it.
But well, that makes it all the more interesting when I do press you on Aubameyang. You just mentioned him. Obviously, it looks as though he has been linked with Barcelona. Maybe Arsenal will see him on his way out. Is that a good thing or a bad thing right now?
It's only a good thing if you were not going to play him. So why keeping him on those kind of wages if Arteta is done with him? So, and this is something that they would have spoken about internally between them, Edu, Mikel, and the Kroenkes or Vinay, the CEO at the club, which are Garlic as well. So if you don't count on him at all, if he's not even training with your squad, he's not even in Dubai currently in the training camp that they have there. Yeah, let him go. Let him go on loan to Barcelona, who are quite keen, especially if the Morata deal doesn't happen, to Juventus, who could be looking for a striker, especially if Morata goes. There's been, I think, a club in England, probably Newcastle, interested. They said no to that as well. But why would you keep someone on 350 a week if he's not going to play at all between now and May? May as well let him go and get someone to take his wages, and then you can move on and hopefully for them, bring another striker in until the end of the season.
Is Stevie looking at the two North London clubs and the missing out here on targets in this January transfer window? Do you think not getting the players in that they need, those reinforcements, will actually determine what happens at the end of this season for them?
100%. No question. You look at Tottenham. I think Tottenham have got somewhat of a bit of steel about them. And if they can get Harry Kane scoring goals again, I had them as finishing fourth. Now, if they had signed Kessié and Diaz, then there's no question in my mind they would have finished fourth. But now we're back to asking about, can Harry Kane start scoring goals again? Because that's where it's down to right now.
Lots to keep up to date with, lots to keep your eyes on, and you can do so over on our transfer website. Transfer deadline day looming ever closer. Make sure to check out all the latest over on ESPN.com. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Let's bring the latest on CONMEBOL qualifiers. The table now looks like this. Colombia really having some struggles. That was not the result that they wanted. And obviously Brazil and Argentina already through. Ecuador pretty much a given, but look at the battle that is going on there. Peru putting themselves in pole position with a very important win on the night. Julian Laron here to talk to us about that game. Tell us a bit more about it, Jules. I know you saw it a lot more closely than we did, Colombia against Peru.
Yeah, Colombia, really something not going well for them. I mean, it's the 6 games in a row without scoring, which is terrible when you think about it. A team with so much talent going forward. Reda not finding the right formula to make them click. I think tonight they could have played for 10 hours and they would not have scored. And yeah, Stevie is right. Ospina has to do better on the Peru goal. But it was always going to happen. You could sense it. During the game, the Colombian players were getting frustrated or not creating. It's not even that they had tons of chances. They had nothing. They didn't create anything. They had a lot of the ball. It was too slow. The ball moving was too slow. There was a huge lack of creativity. James was holding up the ball for too long. And Falcao is 35 and he's having a decent season in La Liga with Rayo Vallecano. But again, he's not the Falcao that we knew 10 years ago, for example, especially when the service is not there, and the service certainly wasn't there tonight. Luis Diaz, who we've mentioned with his move to Liverpool, was disappointing as well, and maybe that played a little bit on his mind. But certainly, Colombia far from their best, and they can still qualify, of course. There's 3 games to go for everybody. We saw in the table that it's so tight between 4th and 7th, really. But tonight, again, like he's been in the last few games, not good enough from Colombia.
I know you're saying there that they can still qualify. It seems so unfathomable. 6 games without a goal for Colombia. With what you've seen, are you confident that they can make it to the World Cup?
Of course, it's possible, but something will have to change. How you change the formation, how you drop Falcao, James Rodriguez, I don't know, but something, Reda has to find something now. He's quite new in this position. He has been quite difficult for him. And certainly those last 6 games have been shocking. I mean, the 0-0 draw against Argentina and Brazil, okay, you can understand, but you can't play Peru tonight in a game that you know you're under pressure because Uruguay have won, because you know that if you lose to Peru, Peru will go even way more above you. So this is a game that they had to win, really. And for them to be so disappointing with the ball and then let a goal like that beating them in the last few minutes of the game is so disappointing that they really need for the next game in a few days' time. They need the reaction. They need to show something more like Uruguay did. Uruguay also were on the back of a terrible run of bad results, and yet they played maybe the best game in a long time in that must-win game against Paraguay.
Yeah, we're going to go back to the game between Brazil and Ecuador now that we do have Stevie with us, because we want to go back to what happened to Alisson in this game. 2 red cards rescinded. He has praised VAR afterwards, saying it did his job properly. Let's look back on those moments. So in the 25th minute in this game, it was a strong tackle from the goalkeeper.
Well, Alisson clears the ball. Alisson has only eyes for the ball and follows through. And the fact that the forward is so late and coming across him means that there's no question. It shouldn't even have been a foul, so if you ask me.
It was a straight red, but it was checked and changed to a yellow. And then we see this very late on, and this was a bit of a crazy moment in itself. We're in stoppages.
Again, Alisson gets to the ball. The key is Alisson on both occasions has gotten to the ball first comfortably. And then the forward has ran into him. And the reason the forward has been caught, the first one with the boot and the second one with his fist, is because he's come running in late. You know, I'll give you a great example. If I'm a fullback and I'm playing a ball down the line and the forward comes across and I play it and he hits me, you don't give a card to the fullback, do you? It's the 2 similar positions. Alisson has played the ball, and then the opposition has made contact with him. So, 2 great decisions from the referee.
So that's you and Alisson happy with the referee in that game. You do feel, though, Jules, that Ecuador are a bit unlucky in this match.
Well, yeah, if you just look at it on the paper, their goalkeeper is being sent off for... I mean, I think he could have easily chopped Mateus Cunha's head on that challenge, even if there's a slight touch on the ball first. And then I think Ener Valencia played it really well with Alisson on the first red card for Alisson, in the sense that he knows that he's not going to get to the ball at all, unlike Cunha in the other incidents. And then he knows that once Alisson has kicked it, the way Alisson has to bring his leg down. If he goes underneath, then obviously there would be contact. And I think the referee, you could see why he gave it red straight away. And then once he's reviewed it, I think it's a yellow for sure. But yeah, Ecuador, I think, were very frustrated. In the end, they got a goal that I think counts a lot for them. They solidified that third place in the table. And it would have been unfair for them, I think, to lose the game on the back of all those incidents with red cards and VAR and everything. So I think the draw in the end was good for them. Even if, okay, if Alisson had been sent off after 26 minutes, maybe the rest of the game would have been different. But still, I think all around it was the right course from the referee.
Yeah, never miss the CONMEBOL qualifiers. There's always some drama to talk about. Mm. And of course, lots of good football to be seen too. Tuesday's schedule looks like this. Bolivia taking on Chile, Uruguay, Venezuela. Argentina will take on Colombia. Let's see if they can finally score a goal. Brazil, Paraguay and Peru against Ecuador. And there's more talk about this and other World Cup qualifying and everything that's going on the Gab and Jules podcast. It's out twice a week. Make sure to download it wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
I wonder which teams will be down in the Championship next season. You can see that Everton are dangerously close to the bottom three as it stands. It has not been a good season for them, but we're now hearing, Stevie, that Frank Lampard is the front runner to be the new manager at Everton. Do you think that would be a good fit?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. Yeah, I think Frank showed in the short time he was at Chelsea that the challenge of the Premier League is not too big for them. I think he was unfortunate that he was at a club in Chelsea where if you have somewhat of a hiccup, then you're out the door. Because previous to that, I thought he was doing a fantastic job. So, yeah, I think it's a good sign for the fans because it's a name as well. And I think it's somebody they'll all trust. So I think it's a good appointment.
OK, there you go. Gets the thumbs up from Stevie Nicol.
Absolutely.
Stevie, Julian Laurent and Jan Agafyatov will be joining us for the latest edition of Extra Time. Make sure you do too. Thanks so much for being with us on ESPN FC. We'll be back tomorrow. Dan Thomas will be with you. See you then. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Julian Laurent, Jan Agafyatov and Stevie Nicol are here to answer your questions. Jan, the psychologist on Team Haaland, we've established that one so far. Been loving hearing from the interview all week. But we'll get underway with these questions and we start with one for you, Stevie. Should Liverpool switch to a back three and have Trent and Robbo as wingers? The back three would be Virgil van Dijk, Matip and Konate.
Absolutely not. I mean, what? Why fix what's not broken? You know, one of the reasons, and it applies to Robertson. I've been asked this question about Alexander Arnold more than Robertson. Why would you not push him further up the field? Well, the reason you don't push him further up the field to start with is because he comes late, and so when he comes late, he gets more time on the ball. So when you're playing with the back four and you've got both him and Robertson, That's why they get to deliver so many great balls, because they come late and that gives them more time to get their head up and either pick a spot or pick out a player. So, hey, it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Do you agree with that, Jules?
Yeah, completely. And I think the main strength of this team has been the three midfielders. Maybe not so much this season, especially after Wijnaldum left the club. But still, if you've got Henderson at his best, Fabinho and Thiago Alcantara, they are what also makes this team special and link everything together. So I agree for the two fullbacks with Stevie, but I also think that the midfield three is very, very important to this team anyway. So if you move to a back three, there's no midfield three anymore. And I think that really unbalanced the team.
So the answer to the question there for everybody is no. Jan, I'll start with you. What's the harshest thing said by a coach to you during your playing days?
Wow. I mean, that is a tough one. We have a lot of beep, 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 beep. One manager in a 5-2, he was so mad at the team that when I tackled him, he kicked me big time when I was lying down. That was quite tough. Another one was unbelievably useless, a guy I had in Germany. So I gave him 8 games, then I had to fire him. He was terrible, but he was terrible in terms of tactics. But if you played in England, at the time I did, there was a lot of swearing. That was a part of the things. I had one manager, I won't name him, and I asked one of the young kids to count how many times he said the F word in the dressing room. In a half time, 52. 5-2 is the number.
Stevie, what about you? We're going on the brutal Tuchel line here.
Well, it's a long story, but I'll cut it way down, because I've told it before. It was Kenny Dalglish after a testimonial game at Anfield between Liverpool and Everton. Full house. I believe the final score was 2-2. And I played the last 20 minutes of the game. And the reason I played the last 20 minutes of the game was because the previous 3 days, I had already played 2 games. And I had already travelled, combined on a bus and a car, about 26 hours. So really, I wasn't going to be on the game. So when I got in the game, my legs were like jelly. They were like rubber. It was somebody else. And I got in after the game and he came straight over to me. And he used a few expletives, basically saying, if that's what you're going to do, let me know beforehand and you won't get on. I was just sat like that.
Cheers,
Eddie. I'm serious. I'll tell you what, if he thought for 1 second that you dropped your standard, he would be all over you. This was a testimonial. Seriously.
I had one. Stevie played probably against Hans Krankel, who was the big goal getter of Austrian football.
Hold on a second, striker. What do you think I am? Hans Krankel, beg your pardon.
Hans Krankel played till he was in 85, my friend. 85. He retired in 89. You're not that young or old, my Mr. Nicol.
Actually,
but he was a young coach when I had him in Rapid Vienna. I remember a game we played against Sturm Graz, and at halftime he took the dustbin, I think that's what he called, and put it in front of me. I was 22, and he said, "I swear to good Jan, you wouldn't even dribble this one." I mean, that was a tough quote to get for a 22-year-old.
Oh, that's not very nice. Jan, the next question's for you, actually. Do you think Norway could win the World Cup or the Euros in the next 15 years with the likes of Haaland?
Hey, I just remembered another Kenny one. So in England, in order to work, you have a thing called a P45 to work, yep. Right? And so Mike Hooper was playing in a game and threw one in. I mean, he threw it in. And he came in at half-time and he turned round to Kenny and he said, "My fault." And Kenny looked at him. He said, "My fault?" He said, "I tell you what." He said, "You know what you can do? Get yourself up the stair, pick up your P45, and..." That was at half-time.
And what happened?
No, Mike just sat like that. Now, Mike's 6'4", by the way. He sat like a wee boy. He looked about 10 years old. He was like that.
So the moral of the story is, do not cross King Kenny. All right, Jan, yeah, let's get back to the Norway one. Yeah, could they win the World Cup or the Euros in the next 15 years with the likes of Haaland and Odegaard coming to prominence? Are there any other young prospects we should be keeping an eye out for?
I'll have a pint, whatever that guy's having.
Could Norway win the World Cup? When we qualified in 94, the last time we qualified was 1938. So 15 years is an unbelievable long time in Norwegian football. No, we will never win the World Cup. We're not good enough. We're too small. I mean, what is the smallest nation that's done well in a World Cup? That was probably Uruguay. We don't have that kind of talent. We have two good talents in Haaland and Ødegaard. And to the question, do we have any more young players coming through? Yes, they are coming through. But as Steve and a lot of other football people will sign, it's the hardest thing to be a talent and then be into international players. That is a huge step for any player.
Jan, the Euros was mentioned there. Could there not be a chance in the Euros?
We're very close. And as UEFA are doing at the moment, they are going from 8 to 16 to 24 to 32. So it's getting closer. We normally lose this in the playoffs, but we have hopefully, we've got a good national coach in Ståle Solbakken, and he's looking for the types of player more than the best players. You know what I mean. I think that we will get an okay team soon.
What's the population? Julian's probably better to ask this. What's the population between Croatia and Norway?
All right.
I tried to Uruguay because I think Uruguay is 4 million or something. Norway is 5. And I'm not sure about Croatia, but I will be in the same level, I think. But an unbelievable football nation. And in the old Yugoslavia, Croatia was the ball nation, not only in football. In every sport with balls.
Next question is for Jules. You're having a five-a-side game. In which order would you pick these strikers? Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Luis Suarez, Karim Benzema, Sergio Aguero and Robert Lewandowski.
Oh, all the best, Jules.
Wow. On the form of now or at the peak of their career?
If they're all in their peak form.
Okay. So, I mean, the number one, you know, Karim the Dream has to be number one. Then I go Lewandowski second, Suarez third.
Whoa.
I go Ibra fourth. And who's the fifth?
Aguero.
Oh.
Yeah, Aguero. I'm not an Aguero guy at all. I love the 93 20 seconds, of course, 2012, but I'm not an Aguero guy. So I'm pretty happy with Benz, Louis, Suarez, Ibra, and then Aguero to finish.
I can't believe you left. I know it's a different question. Slatan in the fourth. Sorry, Steve, go on. Yeah. You're 15 years older than me, please.
I know it's a different question. And you're right as well as that. But that team, if you put that five-a-side team out on the field, it wouldn't win a thing.
No, of course, because you
wouldn't win a thing.
Yeah, of course. But I suppose that maybe if it was your striker, which would you pick first every time?
No.
Yeah.
That's what I said that.
I know.
I prefaced it by saying that.
Listen to the defender making sure that people know in a five-a-side, defenders are important too.
But a striker will always... a striker, when we had the first pick in training, and we did that in the old days, we could do that, the five-a-side, I always picked defenders. Always.
All right, Jan, trying to get brownie points with Stevie.
It's true.
No, it's true. I will win games.
You've just insulted him on his age. Don't try and backtrack now.
I'll tell you what, I've played in five-a-side teams that never had one striker in it and beat everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Strikers are hopeless at five-a-side.
Yeah.
Hopeless.
Defenders are important too. Okay, we've been waiting for this one. Okay, Jan, what's your animal encounter story growing up in Norway? I'm sure it's amazing.
It has to be one in Norway.
We've been getting animal encounter stories all week.
So I've been meeting some animal, that is the question. I'm from Gurske, that is the smallest village in Norway. There was farmers all around. There were cows and sheep and cats and dogs and not lions, but we have eagles. We had everything around me. I'm from the jungle. I mean, that is a question I can't answer. I met every ice bear. I met everyone.
Okay, so you've met them all. That's great. Do you have a particular story, though, that's like anecdotal? You know, Ali yesterday was telling us that he was riding a donkey and ended up getting chased by a bull. We've had all sorts of stories like this. What about, do you have anything like that? Oh, yeah, Shaka had an encounter with a goat unexpectedly where the goat went up on its hind legs.
Oh, well, this is a good story. So, I mean, how can I produce that now? I mean, animals were a part of my life all the time. When I played football, we always had to try to battle with the cows to get the balls back and all that kind of thing. I'm from Farmland. I mean, these people, Shaka, these when they see animals, they're afraid. That is a part of my life. I am like Mowgli in the jungle.
Remember I told you we ran from the cows? Honestly, we were all townies. We got on the field and the cows started coming towards us and we all ran. And then the local boys all just shushed them all away while we were all running the other way.
Did you make sure you got your move on?
We did. It's
right.
Very apt.
All right. Jules, does playing time necessarily equate to good exposure or development for a young footballer? I feel that Ricardo Pepi's move to Augsburg won't be good for his stats in this instance. He is a nine that needs service in the box and he won't get that regularly there.
It's a good question. Game time you need for the experience, for the rhythm, to get used to, even to get used to tackles and challenges from really strong, good defenders. If you're a striker, for example, in Pepe's case, if you play the same amount of time in MLS or in the Bundesliga, no offense to MLS, but you will improve a lot in Germany, even if you don't get as much service and as many goals, certainly at the beginning, than you would get FC Dallas, for example. I still think that it's a step up to go to Europe as a young player and get game time. Yeah, of course, if you go and spend a lot of time trying to get just 5 or 10 minutes there and there, we saw Pepe already starting in the Bundesliga. He's been there 2 minutes. So I do think this is a very, very important experience for them.
Yeah, do you think, Jan, that people are drawing conclusions too quickly on Ricardo Pepi's move to Augsburg?
Absolutely. I think it's a brilliant move from him. I mean, say that he goes to Bayern and he takes the Choupo-Moting role that when Bayern are up 4-0, he will come on and get the odd goals. I mean, I'm 55. I could get an odd goal from Bayern Munich. If Pepe is going to take the next step, he will also make it in Augsburg. Augsburg have got strikers over the years that have scored enough goals and Pepe would do the same. Don't use that excuse that they won't cross the ball to him. If this guy is class and he wants to take the next step, he should also survive in Augsburg and to go as a 19-year-old to Europe, live on his own, develop in a good environment, good coaches, a great role model in Stefan Reuter, who is the head of sport there. Great move for Pepe.
Stevie, do you think that Aston Villa have spent the Jack Grealish money well by signing the likes of Buendia, Ings, Digne?
Well, they did. They did buy Buendia at the beginning of the year and they did struggle. The truth is, it turned around when Steven Gerrard came in because they were one of the candidates to get relegated. And in such a short space of time, nobody is looking at this team as relegation candidates. And they have brought some players in. And so you'd have to say everything they've done since they changed the manager has worked. So has to be a yes.
Jules, last question is for you. After the signing of Vlahovic, where do you see Juventus finishing this season?
Well, he has to deliver a top four finish position. He has to. I mean, you don't spend up to, what is it, 80 million euros and the guy doesn't take you where you want to be. This is the whole idea. If they spend all that money, which is pretty much the whole budget they had for transfer, I think for this window, but also for the summer one, he has to deliver. I know the pressure would be huge on him. And by the way, I think the problem at times for Juve was more getting the ball into the box, more than having someone in there to finish those chances. It's creating the chances that has been a problem as well for them. So good luck to him because I think he will need it. But he has to deliver now. This is the kind of transfer that has to change a team that you know makes you into a great player. So it's not the ball is in his court, it's down to him. But they can't sign him when they're fifth and finish fifth at the end of the season after spending all that money and having all those expectations and pressure around him. He has to deliver now and take them into at least fourth place, maybe even third.
Yep, interesting second half of the season ahead with Vlahovic now at Juventus. Thanks so much for sending your questions in on the latest edition of Extra Time. Thanks so much to all the guys for answering them too. including Jan telling us about the cows on the farm. Join us tomorrow.
Cheers.
And the next day. We are available 7 days a week. Be sure to always catch us.